Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Scumbags, this is the Scummy Mummies podcast with your hosts Ellie Gibson and Helen Thorne.
Hello and welcome to the Scummy Mummies podcast. It's me, Helen Thorne.
And it is me, Ellie Gibson.
And I am so thrilled, Ellie, because we have the wonderful, the delightful, the incredibly talented Nadia Shireen.
Hello. Wow. Hello. That was lovely.
Yes. Well, you are lovely.
I know that.
Well, let's just pretend.
I'm reserving judgment, but yeah, yes. Yeah, I'd like to. I'll be the judge of that. Thank you.
Oh, it's like a test now. I'm worried.
Oh, my God. No, I'm so thrilled because I've been a fan of yours for a very long time. And now you've moved down to Brighton. I thought, yeah. Who can we have on the podcast who's wonderful and fabulous and available and local? It is Nadia Shireen.
I love that you feel the need to talk the guests through our thought process of inviting them on.
It's really nice.
Behind the curtain for you. Yeah. There, Nadia.
I like it.
Yes.
So tell us about you. Maybe introduce yourself.
Well, I'm a picture book author and illustrator. And even though now I do middle grade books, which is kind of like age 7+, I guess.
Oh, readers.
Whenever your kid has grown out, thinks they've grown out of picture books, they will move on to middle grade. And that's what I am now doing.
Ah.
So I write stories and draw pictures of animals, generally, people sometimes. And that's me.
And they're fun. And they're funny books as well. Infused with humour.
Yeah, I hope so. Because, I mean, there are many different types of kids and many different types of books out there. And there are lots of great books about serious issues and emotional issues. Mine are not those books. Mine are quite silly. But that's fun. All I want to do is just make it entertain a small reader and entertain myself. Mm. So that's what I'd go for.
Yes. Now, we always like to start the podcast by saying, tell us about your family. So who is in your family? Who lives in your house, Nadia?
So in my house, it's me. It's my 8-year-old boy and 2 cats called Elmo and Cookie Monster, who they've been living with me for 5 years. They still look like they look like, you know, cats in like RSPCA adverts.
Yes.
Who look like they've been beaten.
Yeah.
They look like that. Even when I'm giving them dreamies, they're always like, oh, don't beat me. I'm like, I've had you since you were kittens.
Right. So they still look like they need to be rescued.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even though I give them nothing but love, they won't let me pick them up. They will allow me to stroke them with my foot.
Oh,
it's a foot only situation.
Are they fetishists? Is
maybe
that a sexy thing?
They sound very aloof.
Oh, they are aloof. But, yeah. I mean, they're cats, I guess. But I'm sad they're not more malleable.
They do still sound like the opposite cats of your cats, I have to say.
My cats are very affectionate, incredibly fat. And when you pick them up, my neighbours say their bones disappear. They just kind of. And Fozzie, the eldest, named after a Muppet, so I think, you know, we're going with that kind of theme. Mm-hmm. The other day I was texting saying, oh, can someone feed the cats, because I was away here in Brighton, and my neighbour said, oh, well, he's come to my house and eaten Molly's food. And then Alice, my other neighbour, said, oh, but he's been to Marmalade's house and eaten Marmalade's food. And I was like, why is my cat so fat?
He's
eating all of the food.
Yes, I think Elmo, the boy, my boy cat, does the same.
Yeah.
I don't want to shame him, but he's looking a bit big boned at the moment.
Yeah,
got a little bit of a pouch going on.
Have you thought of dyeing in black just to make it a bit more slimming?
That's an idea. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, he'd love that.
Colour him in with a Sharpie.
Yeah,
the thing
give
is,
him some Spanx.
I'm stuck with them now, and I do love them. Mm. I do love them, but they're aloof. They don't give me much back. I wonder how healthy that is for me.
Yeah, you know, I think next round, next time you get cats, I'll get you my number of my man, my kitten man.
Have you got a kitten man?
Yeah, he's so good.
Dealer, she's got a dealer. Yeah,
he's in Forest Hill. He's like, oh, he's nice, isn't he? He's nice. He comes over with like crate of kittens. Yeah, it's lovely.
And just like pulls them up and you have got some lovely I'm trying to think of breeds of cat now. I can't.
Oh, British Short Ear. Nice.
Like these cats, I've got some DVDs and some Chinese cigarettes in the van. I could get them if you like. Do your deal.
Sounds good. Hook me up with your cat man.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. But yeah, no, I was never a cat person. I was always like scratchy, aloof, da da da, and then I got them like, I love them so much.
Oh well, I've been talking about getting a dog for a long time, but I get close to it and then I go, oh, I'm too tired.
So much work. And when people say, oh, I can't leave them for more than 4 hours, like, no, that's not going to fit in with my lifestyle.
No, it's a problem, isn't it? So I don't know, maybe that's going to be a bit later.
I'm not a cat person. I did have a cat growing up called Peckham, and then she died. I did love her very much, but then she died and then my parents got a dog when I was a bit older. But I'm not a cat person, and yet this is the other reason cats are bastards. They like me. Or do they like me? They
love
me.
People that don't
magnet.
Like them.
I'm a fucking cat.
I think
magnet.
You're a cat. Did someone who was it who said that you're a cat? We had someone on the podcast. They said, "Oh, Helen, you're a dog, and Ellie, you're a cat."
Oh, I have this conversation dog with energy. My friends. Yeah. I have this conversation with my friends, and I am a dog.
Yeah,
dog energy. Oh. But a cat, yeah, cats just kind of. But actual cats, love human cats.
Because they go up to Ellie. My cat scratched Ellie the other day because he wanted food. I thought, don't scratch, she's not into you.
No. Oh,
she's
not. It actually dug its claws into my knee, and I was like,
that's affection.
Not a cat person.
No. That's affection when they do that. But Helen, are you like
you
me?
Sound
are
you in
needy?
An abusive relationship? Yeah, what are you talking about? That's how he expresses his love for me.
These are like love bites. Oh. Red scratches down the arm.
Oh dear. Anyway, cat chat done.
There we go.
Oh my God. So you live with your son and it's just you two. So you're a single parent. And how long have you been a single parent?
About 4 years.
And how's that going? Are you enjoying it?
It's, am I enjoying it?
How fun is single parenting, Nadia?
It's what it is. Well, I should say, because I don't know what the right term is. I mean, I have a good co-parenting relationship.
Awesome.
Which is a massive thing, and I think is a huge distinction, actually, between people like me who are, I'm divorced, and I co-parent happily with my ex. And it's a different, you know, I'd hate for someone who doesn't have that support to be listening and thinking, she's not a single mum. I don't know what the term is. Is there a different? Is it? It says if you sole parent or
you co-parent. It's whatever you want, really. The definition is if you have your child more than half the time, then you're a single parent. So if you've got them 4 days a week, well, then, or 5 days a week, then you're a single parent because you're doing the lion's share of and I like using the term single parent because it has been so demonised.
Right,
and that's why I want to kind of use it as much as possible because it's like, oh, she's a single mum. I'm like, yes, I am a single mum, and I'm doing twice the work, and I'm earning money and all that sort of stuff. So I think that's why I use the term. But people said, no, you're an independent mum. But the other day someone said, no, you're not a single parent, you're a double parent because you do two jobs at the same time. And I thought, I like that.
Yeah. No, it's not. I mean, you're really right. There is a really natural stigma to single parent in the same way there is to divorce. You wouldn't think that would be the case, but there has been, and maybe, I don't know, it's my background as well. I'm, you know, of Asian, I'm British Asian, Pakistani descent, so there's, I think, a bit more. Ooh, who's that?
Oh, we're in Brighton.
We're in Brighton, all sorts of wacky business.
It's party time
it's
all the time.
It's in clown cars just gone past. So, you know, that the kind of there's a bit of an old-fashioned kind of stigma about those things. Lingers a bit longer, I think, in certain cultures, maybe. And you're right, it can be. It should be joyful, really. I don't feel beleaguered.
No.
I feel really happy.
Yeah.
But did it start out like that, or has it taken you a while to kind of get to that point?
Definitely taken me a while, because I'm learning. I'm 40, going to be 43. So I feel quite late in life I'm learning about being by myself. And being on my own, and that not being a panicky thing or a worrying thing or a problem I need to fix. And it's definitely taken me time to kind of go, actually, no, this is a great thing. Yeah. And I'm actually enriching myself. I mean, I have to say, yeah, it's been slow progress. I can't pretend this all happened overnight. You know, if you chatted to me 4 years ago, we'd be having a very different conversation, I think.
No, that sounds good. And so, what was I going to say? So, yeah, getting back to your earlier life then, because obviously your early life has influenced how what you do now and everything. So, yeah, can you tell us about? Can you tell us about little Nadia?
Who was little Nadia?
Well,
little Nadia was quite similar to big Nadia, really. She was very quiet. So, I grew up in a place called Wellington in Shropshire, near Telford. If any of your listeners were taken on a school trip to the Iron Bridge. That is where, not too far from there.
Is it the home of the boots or the pastry encrusted beef dish?
No,
it's not. To either of those things?
It's not, I'm afraid. No.
Disappointing.
Disappointing. I don't know what to tell you. Philip Larkin was a librarian there for a while, and Carol Decker from Tapao is from there.
I love Tapao.
These are the two cultural. Touchstones.
Philip Larkin family actually wrote. Philip Larkin wrote the lyrics for China in My
Hand. Nobody knows that.
It's a very good pub quiz question. That.
Oh, I'd love to hear Philip Larkin now reciting the lyrics. Of China.
I'd like to hear Carol Decker do an album of Philip Larkin poems read aloud.
Would you though?
What a collab! That would be. That would put Wellington on the bloody map, wouldn't it?
Maybe. I'm going to suggest this to the Lord Mayor of Wellington.
Yeah.
Don't know who that is.
Never mind Carol Decker. She'll do whatever the Mayor says. You don't need to ask her.
And you know what? Little Nadia would have been thinking similar along these lines. Like, where is Carol Decker? Because I was obsessed with... I was very quiet, skinny brown child with... Weirdly, I've got like curly hair. When I was younger, it was very afro-y. I say weirdly because I'm from an Indian-Pakistani family. So there was no history of this hair in the family.
Wow.
All thick, straight, dark hair. And then I pop along and they're like, who's this clown? Who's Lionel Richie
who's
here?
Who's been having a go at the milkman? What's going on?
Exactly. My dad had a slight kint to his hair. Okay. Maybe that's where we trace it back to. So I was just very shy of my hair. I was very shy of being the only brown child apart from my brother, as far as the eye could see. And
were
so,
you conscious of that then, growing up? Was it definitely the only brown person in the village situation?
I was not conscious. It's funny, you're completely unconscious of it, or I was, until people make you conscious of it. And then slowly over the years, you go, oh. But it's a drip. It's a drip then. Like, I remember... a kid pushing me in a pile of dog shit at my first school, saying, oh, you look like Mr. T, you're brown like Mr. T, and kind of pushing me in this dog poo. And my overriding memory is thinking, well, that's ridiculous, I look nothing like Mr. T. He's a very large, muscly man with a beard and moustache. I am a slight five-year-old child. And I just remember not feeling necessarily upset, but feeling baffled.
Yeah, that's completely wrong.
I was just baffled. And I remember then having my hands washed with a teacher, but the teacher being quite peeved about it. Like the teacher, like now, thank God, that would be treated in a completely different way. But back then it was just like, oh, honestly.
What an inconvenience.
I don't even think they told my parents. Can you imagine? But yeah. So it was... And I'm not trying to say I had a childhood of great hardship or racism. Thankfully, I didn't. My dad was a GP, so we were kind of aspirational immigrant working class. By which I mean my parents hadn't learned that it's not middle class to want things. Because that's a very middle class thing, isn't it? Sort of going, oh, well, you know, we'd never send our kids to private school, or we'd never buy a flashy large telly. And my parents hadn't learned that. So they were just, you know, unashamedly aspirational immigrant parents. But it was an odd place to grow up, I guess. Yeah, there wasn't a big Asian community, and I was very much aware. I became aware that I didn't quite fit in the same way with the kids around me. I didn't have the same cultural touchstones. Yeah. They'd like go and play tennis and stuff with their families, or go on caravan holidays. I was like, what are you saying? I don't understand. But that's the same for many immigrant families, I think. There's, you know, the world inside your house is bilingual, there's different food going around, there's different cultural stuff going on, and then outside your house there's this other stuff, so you're in the middle trying to piece it all together. But that can be joyful.
Yeah,
it can be stressful, but as I've got older, I've learned to look at that as a joyful thing and a rich thing. But it, you know, as an angsty teenager, I was like, oh my god, where do I belong?
I guess
maybe in the A team, I don't know.
maybe that girl was right. I'm gonna drink this milk before I sleep. I'm on a helicopter.
Oh, these necklaces are so heavy.
Oh my god.
So were you always arty as a child?
Oh, yeah. Always, yeah. I used to quietly. So you know, little Nadia, even the Nadia of now, my favourite things. Oh, God, they found me.
There's too much going on in Brighton.
Everyone just chill out.
Oh, yes. No, start building a road. Good.
So I was always arty. I would like to doodle in sketchbooks or on newspapers or any paper that came to hand. I'm still the same, really. So Nadia's favourite hobby would be like watching Top of the Pops, listening to ABBA or the Beatles or the Pet Shop Boys, and drawing. Very much the same now.
Yeah.
If I'm honest, not much has changed.
Because you were like that, weren't you? You said you used to like drawing comic-y kind of things.
Yeah, I did lots of comics and I, if this is what you meant, my music taste, I've realised, also has not really evolved.
No.
The rest of my taste in food has expanded.
Yeah.
I do read different books, watch different things on telly, but I haven't really listened to any of the modern music.
Modern music.
Contemporary music for about 15 years. We're going to see Steps with her on Saturday night, and I'm so excited.
Is that quite
excited.
Edgy?
Ah, oh, for me.
Oh, with the support of Sophie Ellis-Bextor, thank you very much.
Oh, come on, that's going to be a good night.
That is just old women and gays, and
yes,
that's our favourite kind of crowd.
That'll be a nice quiet night for you.
Yeah.
Oh, it's going to be lovely.
We're going to get
my jeans and a nice top on, my 2002. We're going to have a lovely time.
Can I be honest and say I was never a big Steps fan? I'm sorry.
I can't lie
about it. But one thing about Steps that I find interesting, we'll talk about this later maybe, but I worked briefly at Smash Hits magazine. Not that briefly, actually, about 3 years. And H from Steps, if any photo of Steps, he's always pointing and sticking his tongue out.
Oh, wow.
That's half an hour of Googling I've got to do later.
Yeah, no,
Thank you.
It's an H from Steps thing. It's like he cannot not have his tongue out, or he's always pointing. It's like, just don't do those things.
Maybe that's his signature look, Nadia. Maybe that's, you know,
I wish him no ill.
But it's,
if you're listening, H.
When I see him on Saturday night, I shall tell him. I said, I met the children's author, Nadia, the other day, and she's asked me to stop pointing. She doesn't like your signature look,
H. Oh, no.
Put your hands down, H.
Yes.
Maybe I should adopt his signature look.
More pointing.
I'm going to start doing that now.
So let's talk about Smash Hits, seeing as you've mentioned it. So were you a writer at Smash Hits?
I wish. No, I was a sub-editor.
Ah.
So I got into magazines, came down to London in 2001 with a dream, with £5 in my pocket and a head full of dreams. Well, not actually £5. Anyway. And I thought, I want to try and get into magazines. But it was difficult to do that if you didn't have, like, mates that worked in magazines, or if your, like, daddy didn't, like, own the company or something. So it's quite tricky. So I just worked for free for months and months and months on various magazines. And then I answered an ad in the paper and went to the Smash Hits interview. And the benefit here of being a nerdy, nerdy, nerdy kid, and, let's face it, a nerdy adult, is that I don't throw away a lot. I've got lots of stuff hoarded. And I went for my Smash Hits interview armed with a 1986 copy of Smash Hits, where Neil Tennant of the Pet Shop Boys goes back to become editor for the day, and they do like a timeline of his day working in the office. And I'm like, this is why I want to work here, because ever since I saw this, I've dreamed of working for you. And I think the people who interviewed me were so alarmed that I kept this magazine for like 16 years. They were like, get her in or I'll call the police.
Yeah. She's already institutionalised.
Yeah.
This is it.
We've got two options.
She's too nerdy to be on drugs or a liability. She's going to do the work.
I think that's why they got me in, because they were essentially worried for me.
Yeah.
And that's how I got the job.
Coming for shelter, Nadia. We'll look after
yes,
you.
Yes, they were like, come here, my child. So I did, and it was great. And I was a sub-editor, so I had, you know, I was helping put the magazine together, doing the lyrics, like checking the lyrics, checking the Black Eyed Peas sand, what we printed that they sang, and generally doing the funny headlines and, you know, editing, lots and lots of editing. But it was great. I loved it. It was like a creche. We were all in our early 20s.
Did you have like famous pop stars popping in into the office, pointing at
Bless
things,
them.
Sticking the tongues out, that sort of thing?
We did, yeah.
Were you working with Kate Thornton at the time?
No, I was post Thornton.
Okay, yeah.
So the editor was Lisa Smazarsky when I joined,
yeah,
who's now the editor of Stylist.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so we would always have pop stars either at the beginning, little hopeful tadpoles. So we had, like, McFly came in and did a little dance by the printers.
Sorry.
So, you know, that kind of thing. Or we had them when they were properly down the dumper.
Yeah.
And there was, like, a revival was needed.
Yeah.
So I met Mark Owen, shuffled round. He was really sweet. This is before Take That reformed. So he was properly down the dumper. He was releasing his Nuclear War single. 4 second warning. Have you heard this?
No.
It's a tune, to be fair.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Four minutes left to go. That's my Mark Owen impression.
Because if apocalypse was impending, that's who I'd want to sing me into.
Yeah.
Much like Hasselhoff astride the Berlin Wall when it came down. You need these great figures at this moment in history to lead the way for humanity. Yes. I think Mark Owen would be absolutely ideal.
Do you know, sidebar, I often worry about dying suddenly in the street or at a service station. And I've got no control over the soundtrack.
Yeah.
So you've got no control over what song you die to. Mm. It could be something awful.
Who would you, what would you pick then if you had a choice? If I said, all right, you can choose your death song.
Oh my God, that's a whole other podcast.
It's obviously 5, 6, 7, 8 by Steps. I mean, I don't know why you're struggling. That's the obvious correct answer.
Well, I presume if that was the case, I would be in some terrible accident. There would have been a stampede or like that. That would be, or an earthquake.
It'd be like the end, the start of The Lion King.
What's the bleakest song you could die to?
5, 6, 7, 8
I think Fairground.
My boots scooting, baby. Oh,
what?
Amazing. Fairground by Simply Red.
Oh, I see. I was thinking Fairground Attraction, which was...
be all right. Be the worst.
That was a huge hit. Perfect.
Was
that around your time?
Yeah. No.
That's a bit early,
but I remember that clearly. I remember them doing it on Top of the Pops and then miming and feeding each other bread. And it was all a big jape. You know, the Top of the Pops was fun and they had balloons and everyone was dancing.
Nobody, and the edgy pop stars, like you say, would come on and make no pretense at actually singing or playing an instrument.
Yeah.
Just like waving guitars around like tennis rackets, even touching the string.
Cyndi Lauper, just going for a wander.
This feels like a real old fart thing to say that people say all the time, but pop music was more fun in the olden times.
Oh, it was. It absolutely was. Yeah. I think about this a lot because I think I don't take much interest in the charts. I don't take any interest in the charts, I should say. But I heard there's that brilliant song that came out a couple of years ago, Blinding Lights by The Weeknd. And I was like, this is great. Why is this so great? Oh, maybe pop is still brilliant. And then I was like, well, hang on, it's kind of not a parody, but it is essentially an 80s song done. I do think the 80s were the greatest era for pop. But anyway, that's another hour long podcast.
Because
the breadth of music was so astonishing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that's what was great about the top 40. I mean, you watch those reruns of Top of the Pops and there's a lot of nonsense on there. Mm. There's a lot of rubbish, but it's such a, like, Dame Kiri Takanawa. and then you've got, like, Two Unlimited. And then, you know, all in the same show. Like, I quite like that.
Yeah.
And I guess you don't get that now.
No, and you don't sit down to watch video clips anymore as well. Like, you don't... Because there was a great show in Australia called Rage, and that would start at midnight on a Friday night, and it would just play music clips all night until it got to the top 100. And then you'd sit at, like, 6 a.m. hungover and watch it, you know, leading
that
up to the number one. Yeah, which was fantastic. And you just sort of, you know, you get the old ones overnight, and different pop stars would curate or, you know, choose, as you like to say, Ellie, as we all like to say. Can we talk about the word curate, actually?
Yeah,
we went to a local restaurant here and they said, Fatboy Slim has curated the playlist.
Oh, please.
And we're like, yeah, he's chosen some songs.
Yeah, he's put the playlist together.
And I was very rude about it, not to their faces, because I'm sure they're very nice people, but I was very rude behind their backs. And then Jay Rayner wrote a review of the restaurant the other day and said, and this Fatboy Slim curated, he didn't curate, he picked some tunes. Like, I was like, yes, I should be the food critic of The Observer. This is further evidence, is what I've always said.
Further evidence, is there a dossier?
Oh, definitely. I will get that job. Absolutely.
But there were events when they came out, when you saw a new pop video as well. You waited for it. There was talk about it.
Like, it was fun, wasn't it? I love that. It's such a great... I just think maybe pop music is a bit like skiffle in that it's... Maybe it will end.
Yeah.
And maybe that's okay. And maybe we were just really lucky.
Yeah. And also...
we were just growing up in that time.
Are we having a little bit of rose-tinted glasses? Because the other day, we're trying to write our Christmas show at the moment, and we're trying to do Feed the World, you know, do they know it's Christmas time? Because why not? Mm. And so we watched the video, and it's like Geldof goes in, and then, of course, it's Paul Young, and then it's Boy George, and then it's...
Spandau Ballet.
And then it's Tony Haddon. Yeah. And it's just all white dudes of a certain age singing. And then right at the end, they let Bananarama in to do the backing vocals. And you just think, it was like many things were and still are just all run by white dudes then, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's no question that it was. And I'm sure, to be honest, still is.
Yeah.
Run by, certainly. I'm sure the people in power are white dudes.
Yeah.
I believe so, yes.
I don't imagine there
are
many
females. I mean,
they're
doing a marvellous job. I mean, they really are. Thank God.
Yay.
Thank God they're there.
So, I mean, at least the music then. Like, you know, Spandau Ballet, True, Duran Duran, some banders. Anyway, look, I just bore on about this eternally, no. So I won't do this.
But can we mention your you actually got on stage with the Flaming Lips? Is this correct?
I did do that. That was so when I left Smash Hits, I was kind of bimbling around doing freelance stuff, freelance sub editor. So I would just go into various offices and do my Mac Monkeying, as we call it. But then every now and then I'd do a bit of writing, and I found myself writing for this short-lived BBC website. And everyone at that time had to churn out I danced on stage with the Flaming Lips dressed as a bear article, because that was like their shtick, and that's how they got easy coverage. So I did that. It was fun. It was quite liberating, because I'm quite shy. I think many authors are. I think many children's authors are. But if you put a bear head on me, blimey.
Off she goes.
Off I go. I just danced away on the stage of the Hammersmith Apollo.
Quite a big you should venue. Just get one. If you had a job interview or something, that might be good to give you a bit of confidence.
I'd feel 100% better if I could walk through life in a bear costume.
Yeah. Well, funny you should mention it. I've bought one. Yes, and we'll send
give
it on.
Give me the deets.
Yeah.
Also, in our Christmas show, we're doing the Lily Allen, the John Lewis advert, you know, with the bear and the rabbit. And obviously...
No, I don't. Adverts.
Well, you'd have to come and see the show.
I'd love to.
Yeah, anyway.
Anyway, so should we talk about your wonderful books, Nadia?
Yeah, let's go out and buy them all.
So how did you launch yourself into the wonderful world of children's literature?
Like most things in my life, it was meandering.
Yeah.
And sort of slow. When I was at Smash Hits, I discovered I was working with an Apple Mac computer. I didn't have one. And it had Photoshop on it, which is like a software, you know, well, everyone knows what Photoshop is, I think. And I was like, oh, look at this. You can draw. If you hold the mouse really carefully, you can draw a bear.
Yeah.
And I kind of remembered, after years of not really drawing much, that I used to like drawing. And I got a response from the people around me. They were like, oh, look, you drew a bear. And I'd like, right... I'd write a funny caption.
Is it you on stage with the Flaming Lips?
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
A portrait. Yeah.
And then I'd like write some funny words, and people would go, oh, you're good at that. And then, you know, they used to give away stuff on the front of the magazines, like notebooks or
lip gloss. So many lip
gloss. Yeah. Exactly. And they were looking for, they were like, oh, we just want some funny animals here. That weird sub-editor likes drawing animals when she should be working. Let's ask her. So they got me to draw like a sheep and a bumblebee. And they were not, I cannot pretend that these were amazing drawings, but they did get printed up, and there were thousands of them printed and plonked on the front of Smash Hits. So that's the first time I went, oh, what I do is a thing, maybe. Mm. Or it could be. I'm going to become freelance and become an illustrator. 7 years later. You know, I did, but being freelance in magazine journalism just meant you were working all the time. So I did a few evening classes over the years. Eventually, I did a part-time MA at Cambridge School of Art, which I almost failed. In fact, I met my old tutor the other week, and he confirmed that I did almost fail, because it took 2.5 years, because I was doing it part-time. And MAs cost a lot of money. Mm. So I was kind of, like, paying... like working to pay for the MA, not having any time to study.
Yeah.
You know, it's a real privilege being able to do any kind of higher education. And for the last 3 months, my husband, my ex-husband now, but at the time, said, look, you've put in a lot of time and a lot of energy, that just stop working for 3 months and give it, you know, go full whack and don't. Because he knew that, and I knew as well, I'd be so sad if after all that time I failed at something. So I went for it and made a little picture book. And weirdly, at the graduation show, it got a big response. And I just wanted to not fail, because I'm quite a goody two-shoes.
Mm.
And in the event, I came away with lots of phone numbers and people emailing me with book deals.
Amazing.
Wow.
Which was nuts. It was amazing, but it was nuts and unexpected.
So can you tell us about some of the characters that you use in your children's picture books?
Well, picture books were generally animal-based. So my first ever picture book was called Good Little Wolf, which got some attention because it's got quite a downbeat ending. Basically, it features a very cute good little wolf, and he dies, spoiler alert, he dies at the end. this was good for me in some ways because it got the book noticed and I was like, oh, who's this Nadia Shireen person? But very bad for my Amazon rating. There's a very, lots of quite angry parents.
Oh, really?
Yeah, who were like, my little Billy was so upset. But the trick with that book is I don't spell out that the character dies. You can, it's implied.
Ah.
And if a child is not ready to deal with that darkness, they don't see it.
Mm.
They just go, oh, well, the wolf went to the shops.
And then Mark Owen came out and then sang.
And then Mark Owen comes out and sings
4 minutes.
A nuclear war anthem. No, the problem would be when parents would go, do you understand, little Timmy, that Rolf has been eaten by a big bad wolf? And then the child would be upset. It's like, well, don't spell it out, you...
Yeah.
And
what was the thinking though? Why did you think, well, I'm going to put a death in my first children's book?
It wasn't like a it just kind of, that's just how it developed. I just thought it'd be funny.
Yeah.
And it's the simple answer. I try and keep it simple with when I make any of my books. I'm serving two people. Me, because I'm an extremely horrible, harsh judge of myself. And the child, the reader. I'm loyal to them before I'm loyal to their parents.
Good.
And that's how I want it to be.
Yeah.
I don't want to start moralising or being... You know, I've had a couple of people say, oh, why do you put chips in your... But at the end of Billy and the Beast, they go off to get chips. And they're like, oh, it's a bit unhealthy, isn't it? I'm like, it's chip. They're chips.
Who doesn't like chips?
Who doesn't like chips?
Chips are good.
Why wouldn't you be happy and celebrate by eating a hot bag of chips with your mates?
Mm. Yeah.
And that's what I'm about. You know, I don't want to start.
And it's relatable. You're like, let's chop up some carrots, everyone, and we'll have those and make our own hummus.
It's just boring. Mm. It's like, we don't do that to each other. Like, we consume all sorts of nonsense on telly.
Yeah.
Or, you know, we read crappy magazines or we read whatever. Why does everything have to... Why do we have to spoon-feed kids with this kind of eat your greens thing?
Mm.
They're really funny. Kids are much funnier than I think adults give them credit for.
Yeah. So, I'd like to see Charlie and Lola on 20 Lambert and Butler a day. I think let's get really real. Let's, you know, people like smoking. Why not?
Why the heck not?
Imagine if everybody in the Magic Faraway tree had been pissed all the time. Fucking brilliant.
I think they probably are. I think they're quite high, actually.
I think there's some other stuff going on in the Magic Faraway.
It's very strange. And obviously, like, Billy, the character, does she look a little bit like you? Because she's got this amazing afro.
Yeah, she's basically me if I'd been braver as a little girl. So, as I said, when I was a kid, I was deeply shy, essentially mute, and I was very shy of this big black curly hair that I have, and I would, like, make my mum get it cut really short. My mum, bless her, didn't know what to do with it, because she was like, what is this? I don't know. Would like be washing it with Vosine, which is obviously really bad for curly hair. And I was always wearing like baseball caps or like trying to hide. And I thought, wow, wouldn't it be great if when I was a kid, I hadn't felt like that. You know, I'd been kind of brave and bold. So that's really the extent of the thought that went into Billy. It's like me, but braver.
Yeah.
And then obviously she came out, that Billy and the Beast came out 2017, I want to say. And since then, there's been a much bigger conversation about representation in children's books. And, you know, I'm happy to be part of that conversation, but ultimately, I just think we need more of everything.
Yeah.
You know, I think people can get a bit tied up in knots about, oh, this book should be performing that job and we need this book to represent that. And I think just, we want abundance, we want more choice, and not every book featuring a non-white character needs to be earnest or kind of worthy. They can also be funny, and it doesn't need to be the point of the book. We just need choice.
Yeah.
It's slowly changing, I think. I've still been asked, you know, sometimes I'm told to pin down, oh, well, you're British Pakistani, so is Billy of the same ethnicity? Is she South Asian? Or is she black? Is she Afro-Caribbean? Or is she... And I'm like, you know what? No one says... Are Charlie and Lola Irish?
Yeah.
Or are they English? Or are they French? Like, literally nobody has to answer that question, so... Mm.
Probably French because they smoke so much, that'd be my guess.
Yeah. Do you reckon?
It's all them fags. That's why they're so thin.
Just croissants and cigarettes.
Yeah.
I will never, ever, not ever eat tomato, ever. But I will have the cigarette.
But I think that's it, is it? Because we got sent some books the other day by a great company called Little Box of Books. And
their thing is
they send out books, as I'm sure you know, that feature black characters and characters, Asian characters and characters from other ethnic minorities. And they sent this press release with it saying, you know, 33% of the kids in our schools are, you know, not white. Mm. And yet only, I think it is something nuts, like 1% of the kids in
books are not.
Yeah,
not
it's
white.
Awful.
It's so awful. It's bananas. And their whole thing is as well, like you're saying, it shouldn't just be about diversity for the sake of tokenism. It should just be books that have characters in who are black, who yeah. just happen to be black, black, and that's not the reason for the book, or the it doesn't drive the plot, but that's just a thing. But do you think things are improving?
I don't. It's very hard to say. I don't know, because the industry is a huge sprawling thing, and I'm just very much, you know, I'm like, I don't know what's going on. I don't chat to publishing bigwigs. I'm just making my books, so I'm not sure. I think people make more noise about it, which is good. I think people are more mindful of it, but I don't know how much progress has been made. It's also, I should say, important that the white kids see non-white kids too. Because, you know, all my life I just grew up consuming media that featured white people, and that was fine. I didn't question it. Mm. I just accepted it. And it's like, I think that gets left out of the conversation sometimes. I want my Billy books to be, and I know that they are enjoyed by, like, you know, small white children.
Yeah, it's my own small hooray. White children do love yeah. the Billy book. My small white child Joe absolutely yes. loves it. So yes. well done,
white child.
Well done, because it's about time white men had something for them. Thank you for doing that. It's about time. It's their turn. It's their turn. Have you got?
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
A Scummy Mummy's confession for us.
I was thinking about this. So it needs to be like parenting based, doesn't it?
Or it could be your own humiliation. We're very much
well,
that.
We'd be here all day. I mean, I was thinking about parenting based. I mean, I let my child fall on top of my laptop. I remember when he was a baby. Like, there are lots of things like that where I just dropped to look after my baby.
Let my child fall is a nice way of saying dropped, isn't it? That's
yeah.
what we're saying.
It's a polite way of saying dropped. Now, I did run this past my son this morning, and he was like, "You did what?" I was like, "It's fine, you were fine." He was like, "But it could have hurt, that was metal." I was like, "It was just a little laptop, it was fine." But I was so, he didn't like to sleep as a baby, so I was fully tonto when he was born, and like for the next 2 years.
Yeah.
So there was sleep deprivation, just the worst thing. So there were many fails in that time where we did almost die. Like I could try and like make a joke out of it, but I remember once staggering, like crossing the road with him in a pushchair, and a car stopping and honking because I was just about to walk in front of a car. That's a bit downbeat, isn't it?
Oh, no, but it's the truth. Yeah, it's speak your truth.
I'm speaking my truth.
Ellie and I have both talked about it because neither of us had children that slept. And just being completely just out of it. And you said you remember driving.
Yeah.
And when you thought, I really shouldn't be driving.
Mm. Oh, no, I remember not getting in the... I remember getting in the car and going, I can't do this. I'm too tired. Mm. And getting out of the car and ringing my mum and saying, I can't drive over today because it's not safe. Yeah. I don't know. I'm getting in the car going, is the steering wheel? Was it brake pedal? Is that the brake pedal? I'm going, no.
But it's a massive thing. And like, oh, those people with children that sleep. Like, I never want to hear from... No, I'm happy for you if that's true. But it's not really, because it actually fundamentally changes your personality and your character. And I do sometimes often I'll look at photos of my child when he in his early months and years and like weep and go, I wish I could remember being there because I don't remember any of it. because it was one long parenting fail, it feels like, that first couple of years. Yeah. And it probably wasn't, but I've got very little proof otherwise. But what it does mean is that now he's 8 and I try my best to be a lot kinder to myself. And I remember that, like, in 10 years' time, I'll be looking back at pictures of him when he was 8 and be like, oh, I wish I could remember that time. So I try very hard now to be in the moment, but kind of do more of that, of just going, he is 8, it is brilliant. And, you know, soon he will be 9, and that is brilliant. And I try and do more of that to make up for the endless parenting fail that were the early years.
The laptop incident.
The laptop incident, but symbolic of just a general daily fail.
Yeah.
Hey, that's our whole shtick.
I was going to say, we made a good career company. And money out of it.
Hurrah! Yes. There we go. Yeah. Oh, well, there we go. We better end it. I feel like we could chat all day, especially now it's bloody quiet for the last 5 minutes.
I know.
Seven precious minutes.
It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much. And so your books...
My book, so Grimwood is the book that I need all your listeners to go out and buy, just because at the moment all the famous comedians called David are like doing really well, and like the quieter people called Nadia from Telford are not doing as well. So can you run out and buy Grimwood? Make me famous. Get me on Graham Norton.
Yes, that is the dream.
Grimwood, there will be a World Book Day special of Grimwood. So when your kids get that bleeding token in March, they can skip out and get a free Grimwood book.
Oh, get your Grimwood. Amazon Prime Day, as we always call
Amazon
it.
Amazon Prime Day, exactly right. Yes. And what age group is Grimwood?
So that's like 6, 7+. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't like to put a limit on it, but you could read it to like a 5-year-old. Yeah. It's a heavily illustrated chapter book.
That sounds perfect for my 10-year-old.
Very
actually.
Silly.
Yeah, excellent. All right, well, I will now buy a copy, which I should have bought before we saw each other.
How dare you?
Excellent. And I adore Billy and the Beast, and I love Barbara Thosewood as well.
Thank you, very much.
I like books about angry women, you know.
Oh, Je suis Barbara, though. Yeah. I've had a big response from women saying, wow, I'm feeling Barbara. It's like, yeah, me too, mate. I mean, I'm a middle-aged woman.
Yeah,
I'm Barbara most days.
I'm angry a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And I've got better
I'm more Margot, but I hear you.
That is it. Well, Nadia, thank you so much. And where can people find you on the internet?
For my sins, I'm on Twitter at Nadia Shireen, and that's it. I think I'm on Instagram, but I don't use it much.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah. No. You're really selling it in there, yeah.
Sorry, yeah. Nadia Shireen draws. I am on Instagram, and I post every now and then.
Yeah, excellent.
Lovely.
Excellent.
Well, thank you very much for coming on the podcast. Lovely to meet you. And thank you very much for listening. Until next time.
Bye-bye. Bye. You're fucking off to Sheffield, which is where you both went to university. And I love the fact that you probably orbited each other for many years.
I know, we probably did.
Yeah, did you go to 96 to 99?
Pretty much the same as me.
Oh.
So did you go to Stomp at the Student Union for indie disco?
Oh, well, I was more Love... What's it called?
Love Shack.
Love Shack and Pop Tarts.
I also frequented Love Shack and Pop Tarts.
Oh.
Did you see a brown girl with big hair get very excited whenever Take On Me came on?
We almost certainly danced together.
I remember falling over quite dramatically just to those opening beats of Take On Me.
Did you
see? Because I wasn't near the dance floor. I was like,
did you see a girl also with curly hair, like me, but much, much thinner, just constantly smoking? Just always smoking. That would
How
have been me.
How did we not meet?
How well, did we very not easily. Die of lung cancer, we asked ourselves.
Can we please talk about the Curry House? So when we did a gig in Sheffield a couple of years ago, the coldest venue in the entire world, Ellie took me after the show to a Curry House that was never closed. And there was a man that was...
It seems like a quiz question. Name that Curry House.
Well, I'll guess. Balti King.
The king of all Baltis. Available only now at Balti King. Oh, did you like Balti King?
No. No, well, can I tell you for why? Because I am, as I've mentioned, I'm of Pakistani descent. So every single night at home, boring, another pan of rice and freshly cooked dal and like 2 fresh curries. Oh, mum. And when I went away to university, it was a rude shock. It was like, oh my God, I feasted like a queen for the last 18 years of my life. Now what? I have to live like you people.
Yeah.
Don't worry, we're going to go for a curry. I'm like, go for a curry? I've never gone for a curry. Haven't needed to ever go for a curry in my life, because that just means go downstairs. So we went to Balti King. It was the most depressed. I was horrified. I was like, this, what is this?
I'm not going to pretend the food was in any way great, never mind authentic, but they did serve lager till 3 o'clock in the morning. That's my kind
of
place.
That's what it was known for, I
guess. Yeah, that was bad. I went in there many, many times because, as you'll remember, Love Shack finished at 2, and then you would have to walk past Balti King to get to the Hall of Residence.
Was Love Shack at the thingy?
It was in the Octagon, wasn't it?
In the Octagon, yeah. Oh, it's all very vaguely coming back.
What I really liked was Ellie was like, now he does a special kind of... what do you call condiment with the pappadums, and it was chopped up raw onion in ketchup.
Very nice.
Very, very tangy.
That classic Indian dish, which I'm sure your mother would make every day as
well.
Oh,
I'm sure. Yeah.
Goes
just
with everything.
Stir the onion into the ketchup. I mean, no offence to the Balti King dudes. I wonder if it's still going.
It is still going because I made Helen go there when we went back to Sheffield.
How did it stand up?
And Tony, the owner, he's still there and he claimed to remember me. I suspect he says that.
He says that to everyone.
All the girls and the boys.
Yeah.
But it is still going. It's an institution. It's an institution. But and the food was. As we remember.
Okay.
It.
Yeah, it was okay. It was
classic.
Yeah.
Very good.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.